listen to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right. Welcome to episode 140 of Rogue Startups. We've had a little summer hiatus because of vacation and other conflicts going on with Craig off at conferences and me out of town, but we've managed to finally convalesce in the same place and the same time, more or less. Welcome back to North America, Mr. Hewitt.
Thanks. Yeah, it's amazing. We're currently just one time zone away, Dave. I can't believe it. I'm in the panhandle of Florida visiting some family right now, so it's central time, and it's like amazing to be on the same time zone as like most of my customers instead of like, you know, finishing my day when they're just getting started. So it's nice.
Yeah, that is kind of nice. It's been kind of crazy, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been how many weeks? 3 weeks since we've talked, Dave? Because I know we had Val on for the podcast episode 2 weeks ago, but then a week or two before that, probably since we spoke. So maybe a month even.
Yeah, probably pretty close to that. Yeah. We've had some work done in the house, and so that's kind of jacked up all of my schedule and try to find a quiet enough place to podcast. But then add to that, you know, a little bit of freelance client and family vacation and other stuff, you know, that it definitely throws us off for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you guys taken, I know you took a camping trip or a little holiday a couple weeks ago. How was that?
It was good. We went, so we've done a couple of things with the kids in July. One of them was we actually went up to the mountains and had a whole adventure up there where our radiator blew up at the very beginning of our trip. Thankfully, we were gone for 5 days, so the day that it happened on the 4th of July, I was able to tow it over to a garage and let it sit there for most of the time and get fixed the day before we left. So that was a bit of an adventure. And then last weekend we went to the other side of Colorado out in the western slope where there was actually a fire. Oh, geez, probably not even 30 miles away from us. That was looking pretty scary. And we were staying in the middle of nowhere, Colorado, where trees were super dry and the ground was like dust. And you're just thinking, I'm one
just
good
ripe for forest fire.
I'm one good wind shift away from evacuation here. You know, it puts a serious reality on it. I mean, Colorado's had a lot of wildfires this year, and we've even had a couple that are fairly close to Denver, and lots of them you've seen the smoke on the Front Range, and you walk outside and you're like, holy moly, who's got the campfire going? Except it's not a campfire. It's just the forest is on fire. It was a good time. Good to get away, you know.
It's we've been traveling a fair bit too, so we're currently in the United States for 3 weeks straight. So came in about 2 weeks ago now, I guess. Went to Podcast Movement, so a big podcasting conference in Philadelphia last week. So by the way, anyone who says yeah, let's go to a 4-day conference, just be prepared to burn out about day 2.5 and be like, I just can't take talking to people anymore, or like being up too late and drinking too much and being in indoor, like hyper air conditioned everything. So, I mean, it was a really, really good conference. Personally and professionally is a really good conference. The first conference I've been to, I think probably like your Shopify conference earlier this year, where it's not like MicroConf or FemtoConf or Rhodium or something, where it's just like go to further your business on like a personal level, but like I could actually go there and get more business and partnerships and stuff like that. So that was really different. We should talk about that at some point, but it was really long. I mean, it was 4 full days of conferences and tracks and talks and dinners at night with customers and stuff, but it was really good.
I can't believe it's actually that long. Like, I don't know of any other conference that goes for 4 days. Business of Software doesn't do it. MicroConf doesn't do it. Magento, Imagine, Shopify Unite, I'm trying to think, eTail. Those are like some e-commerce conferences. They've got multiple ones of those, but those are like 2-day conferences. You know, they'll usually do, maybe if it's a 3-day conference, one of the days is like a recreation day where they have an activity plan, but there's like at most 2 days of like real stuff going on. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of weird. Why do you think they do that?
I don't know. I mean, it was, Yeah, it was like the day before was definitely like workshops and stuff that was like optional, I guess. But that's the stuff we sponsored. So Casto sponsored three workshops the day before the conference, I guess, officially started. So for me, maybe it was like a day longer. But everyone else was supposed to be there for like an opening registration thing on Monday, which is the day like we sponsored all the workshops that morning. And then, yeah, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, all day. And it was kind of it was cool, but it was different. Like they had the keynote like the end of the first day, like the opening keynote was like the end of the first day and stuff. So I don't know. It was more of a convention than a conference. Like there was thousands of people with multiple tracks and stuff. But yeah, I mean, all the conferences, all the kind of startup and bootstrappy conferences we've been to are really two solid full days. And there might be a little thing before and a thing after, but they're totally optional. Most people don't go to them. And for me, that's like the perfect amount because you want to be able to really focus your time and energy and focus, you know, with what you're learning and networking and doing deals and all this kind of stuff.
It's hard to be engaged like that for more than a couple of days straight, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't do it either. You know, after a couple of days, you know, I usually go early to MicroConf and just do like networking things on Saturday and Sunday. And then, you know, even by like Monday morning, my voice is already starting to go a little bit. But after the second day, I'm like, okay, socialization has reached a max. I can't do any more.
Yeah.
Like, that's too much. It's too much. Yeah.
Yeah, I got up Thursday morning and I was supposed to leave at like 6 o'clock at night, and I was like, nope, I'm gonna leave at noon and get home at a decent hour and be back with my family in time for dinner and stuff. So, but it was a really good conference. Met a lot of our customers, met some like industry partners that we're doing integrations with now. So that is super awesome. Totally worth, you know, the price of going and everything just to meet those people and kick those integrations off. So, yeah, it was a really good conference. And now we're traveling, you know, for another. Gosh, now it'll be another 2 weeks. And I'm like kind of trying to embrace this. Like in the summer, everything is a little slower. Customers are not working as much. I'm not able to work as much. And I kind of am trying to say, like, it's okay. You know, like don't like get frustrated when people aren't responding and getting back to you as quickly, or if business slows down, because I'm slowing down too. I'm trying to say, like, it's okay. Once the middle of August hits, everyone will be back to work. And things will be kicking again. I guess I can already tell, like in the last week, things are kicking up a little bit more. Maybe some people are back from vacations, but yeah, in the last, say, the last month has been like markedly slow across all, like across the board, customers and industry partners and everything. It's just been like everybody's gone. It's crazy.
You know, that's kind of funny because if anything, I've seen not the exact opposite, but mine has been more steady, I guess. And maybe a little bit has been upticking because I think for e-commerce, you know, we're now what, 2, 3 months away from Black Friday. So there's definitely, you know, getting stores locked down and getting things ramped up and having all the right stuff in place. So those that are thinking ahead are like trying to get it done now. Those that aren't thinking ahead will be getting it done at the last minute, but you know, it's still, it definitely hasn't like died off completely. In fact, for me, I think the dead zone was probably more like May and June. Yeah. So I've seen a little bit of a change in July here, which is good. But I've actually been trying to take advantage of the slower time with customers and the like to, you know, double down on features. So I've actually started active development with Recapture. I don't know if that we mentioned that on previous episodes, but that,
No, I mean, I know you and I've talked about it offline,
yeah, no, we it's actually a thing. I'm doing it now. I'm in the code.
but
Everybody should be very scared. And you know, I'm making headway on a couple of big features, and I've launched something about customer lifetime value, which we are now the only email marketing service that's actually doing this, and I'm kind of excited about that. So it's getting great reception with customers right now. They're looking at this going, wow, I've always wondered how to do that. I was just talking with three customers in the last couple of days, and one of them was like, yeah, we've always wanted to see that, but we never quite knew how to do it. And another one was like, yeah, that's going to be super useful. And the other one was like, yeah, that's really cool to be able to watch it. So we like accumulated a month's worth of data so that we could show them like a graph of this thing changing over time. And we launched it, you know, like maybe 20, 25 days into that graph so they could see a decent set of trends, because I didn't want to throw it out there and have, hey, look, there's 2 points of data on there. Because that's not so cool. But, you know, we've got that out there now, and then we're adding some new emails that are going to directly impact that. But, yeah, there's just, like, with my developer on Recapture, he's got other stuff going on, too, and he can only give me so much time a month. And my budget's running dry, so I'm like, all right, if I'm going to get the stuff out there because it seems to be stuff that people want, looks like it's going to move the needle, then I need to get out there and make it happen, because I just can't sit around for 4, 5, 6 months and wait for this stuff to go. You know, it's too long. Too long.
Yeah. So you guys have launched this new feature. Is it like a paid upgrade, or is it just like a feature that you're hoping to get more people on the platform for?
Right now, it's something that's showing up on the analytics page, and that's all that it is.
Mm-hmm.
The next step is to add in various email campaigns that directly impact it, and then we'll show you what that is. So you can look at it for free right now. So that's kind of a, hey, look, you know, come see the only platform that'll generate your customer lifetime value for you, and we'll show it to you for free. If you want to impact it, if you want to make it better, well, guess what? You're going to have to upgrade and use these following things to do it.
Gotcha.
So that's what we've got on tap anyway. Gotcha. I don't know. Maybe I haven't really thought about, like, monetization. Like, is this something that we show them on the trial and we, you know, give them 2 weeks worth of data, and then when the trial ends, we kind of put a big question mark where their number used to be so they can't see it anymore? Mm-hmm. Or do we make it so that, you know, right now, because all the analytics, like if you look at your abandoned cart analytics, it's all free on the platform. And that was one of the things that was always said, hey, you know, we'll give you free analytics for life. But if you actually want to recover revenue, which is the whole point of Recapture, then you got to actually pay for it. But in this case here, it's not clear yet. Like I need a little more customer input to say, you know, hey, is this more than just a cool thing? Are you doing anything with it? Are you wanting more specifically around it? You know, we've got some ideas and things like that, but I definitely need to do some customer development now that we've got it out there and I can get some specific feedback.
Cool. Yeah, it's exciting to launch new features. I mean, we should talk about this at some point, too. I mean, we just launched a new feature a couple days ago, actually. And it's tough. I mean, after you launch, like, the big product, I mean, we launched, whatever, a year and a half ago or whatever at this point. I find launching new features really challenging to get, like, the messaging to your existing users of, like, what the value of upgrading or getting involved in this new feature is. And if you're upselling them, like, why should they need to do that? Because, I mean, we all think about, I think about at least, like, this is our thing and you should come use it from using something else, or if you're starting from scratch, you should use Castos instead of someone else. But if you're already a Castos user, why should you start using this other thing? I don't know. I don't spend as much time thinking about that kind of stuff as like what our main value proposition is, I guess. I don't know. Have you run into that?
You know, it's kind of hard. I haven't done that many feature launches on the thing here, but I did with the review booster. I remember I struggled with it and I put out a bunch of stuff and I had messaging around it, but it never really got like tons of traction. And this was just sort of finishing up something that the previous owners had already, you know, mostly put into place, but we just needed to take it over the finish line. And then that sort of coincided roughly about the time we were also starting the Shopify stuff. So it ended up that we ended up adding it for both platforms at the same time and doing all the rest of the work. But then when I launched it and I pushed it out there, it was, you know, I had things that talked about the value of why they want to do it, but it obviously wasn't necessarily the most compelling thing that people were looking for, because we didn't get a huge uptake, because I said basically you had to be on this plan to get it. And so I was hoping, you know, we'd get some internal upgrades based on that. Didn't pan out.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, all right, well, the people that were already on it, I pushed it on them and I said, you know, hey, you've got this feature available. Why aren't you using it? And they're like, it's just not really important to us right now, or we're doing something else. You know, I'm like, okay. So, you know, but this was one of those things that, because it had been developed by the previous people, it wasn't something that I had done the customer development for and tried to figure out, is this like the most important thing that they want? That's just what they did. And it was so close to being done, it didn't make sense not to finish it. And so we pushed it out, but you know, it didn't move the needle, and it didn't seem to rock anybody's world. So that's when, you know, I had to take a step back and try to figure out what made more sense, which is where the customer lifetime value stuff came in.
We've had a couple of customers recently ask us for like a public facing roadmap or a way to nominate and upvote features. And it's definitely not something we have, but it makes a lot of sense. And I think you run the risk a little bit of, like, I was chatting with kind of one of our mutual friends about this actually earlier today. I think you run the risk a little bit of like exposing your roadmap to your competitors, which is not always good. But I think if you give your customers and your fans a way to give their voice to you and your product roadmap, it is helpful, because we all think we know what's best, right? But maybe we don't. And I think maybe these feature rollouts are a result of us thinking we know what's best and maybe not always knowing. Because, I mean, the feature we launched has been adopted pretty well. And it's like a paid upgrade feature. So we're now Castos is now automatically converting audio files to video and republishing them to YouTube. So Dave, our show will be, Rogue Startups will be on YouTube. All 140 episodes soon will be all on YouTube.
Whoa, no way.
Yeah. So it's a really cool feature, but it's a paid upgrade. So like people would opt into this new plan. And then when, anytime they publish a new episode, it gets converted to video with like a customized image template and then published to their YouTube channel. So it's really cool. And there are other competitors in the industry that do this and stuff. So it's not like the most earth-shaking feature ever, but it's cool. A lot of people have been asking for it or similar things. And it's something that makes sense for like a paid upgrade, because it's like it's a decently neat feature. But then I wonder, like, we spent 2 months developing this, and like, could we have done something else that have made a difference in just getting more users or getting more use revenue out of our existing users? So I don't know. I mean, I think it's going pretty well so far. We have, you know, dozens of new customers on it, which is pretty cool. But yeah, I think it's always like a crapshoot of like, okay, you're going to take the time to invest in developing this and kind of making this your thing for the quarter, probably. Is it going to work or not? It's a guess. And even getting feedback from customers, I don't know that it's any more guaranteed than anything else, you know?
No, it's not. But I mean, this is the hard thing about trying to be like the product visionary, right?
Yeah.
That's a great segue. Wasn't it though? I was thinking about how can I work this in here? And now that we've talked about it, now it's turning into a really lousy segue. But yeah, but so today we wanted to talk about the difference between product visionaries and product managers. And which skill set do you need as an entrepreneur, and which one are you better at, and which one is more important? And in this particular case here, I think it's very difficult to take on both roles and do them well for almost anybody. You know, there are obviously very few exceptions that exist out there, so I'll just throw out the obvious one, right? Steve Jobs.
Yeah. So we should define what these two terms mean, because the title, for me, the titles aren't like totally obvious. I mean, kind of generally they are a little bit, right? But like a product visionary is the idea guy, kind of, right? Like finds the hidden niche or the need in the market. And a product leader is someone who takes that and brings it to market and implements, right?
Right. And more specifically, like the product visionary, they can look at whatever that hidden need is in the market and design something that truly fulfills that need. Like, you know, the example I was bringing up, Steve Jobs, nobody necessarily knew that a smartphone that was super easy to use that evolved from the iPod was exactly what the market was craving. But Steve kind of saw that coming. So that's a visionary approach to it. And lots of other people have that. Henry Ford had this. You know, he wasn't asking his customers, what do you want? Because they would have all said, what? Faster horses, right? Instead, he's like, all right, we're going to take this engine that I saw a design for over here, and we're going to put that into the car. And except, now that everybody's got these cars and they're doing their individual things, we're going to actually create an easy and cheap way to manufacture them so that everybody can afford one. And then that's unlocking the market. That was the thing that he really saw. And that wasn't something that was entirely obvious to everybody else, because all those other auto manufacturers and the inventors of the internal combustion engine, they didn't see that. Henry Ford picked that out. But let's contrast that with a product leader. The product leader, like you said, is somebody who brings that idea to market. So that's the person, let's call them, if the other one's the idea guy, this is the anal retentive detail guy or girl. And they're the ones that have to like make sure the I's are dotted, the T's are crossed, everybody's like following up on things. Is stuff getting done? Are we on time? I mean, this is a difficult piece of any sort of development right there. And if I were to like say, all right, what am I right here on the scale? Am I more of a product manager or am I a product visionary? And it's absolutely, I'm a better product manager, way better at that. Like that's what my whole career has been largely, somebody else generates the idea and then I can bring it to fruition. But if you're looking for somebody to like come up with the market pain and sort of find the right thing that fits there and do the customer validation and all of that stuff does not come naturally to me. It is much more of a struggle. And that's the stuff that I think we have to balance a lot as entrepreneurs, don't you?
Yeah, no, for sure, for sure. I mean, this is it's also kind of a life cycle, I think, of a business or a product. So this whole kind of concept comes from a Casey Winters blog post, and so we'll link this up in the show notes. But in the article, they talk about Ev Williams and Jack Dorsey of Twitter. And so I just on the flight over here from France read Hatching Twitter. It's a fantastic book. Anybody who wants to kind of hear like the backstory of all those guys and how they pivoted from another business into Twitter and the backstabbing and controversy and drama around Twitter and their investors and stuff. It's fantastic. But there's really it's funny actually. I think Ev Williams is a little bit, it sounds pretty good of both, right? Like he's a good kind of product visionary, but he was brought back in to run Twitter once it had like, product market fit or whatever, to stabilize the platform, grow its user base, get some revenue coming in, all this kind of stuff. Jack Dorsey has always been the like wild-haired mad scientist guy. But what's weird, and I don't know, maybe things have changed there, but now he's running Twitter as like the public company and IPO'd it and everything. From my perspective, like as a founder, like say whatever Castos would ever go public, which it never will, I'm sure. But like I would not be the,
Don't sell
I
yourself
would
short,
not,
man. I'm gonna buy into that IPO.
I would never be the one to bring something public because I am not the leader of a business at that stage. I am probably more towards the visionary side of things and less towards the like manager implementation side. Maybe I'm kind of more in the middle. David, I do agree you're like more on the product leader side. But yeah, I think that like as we're looking at our businesses, which may be how we kind of bring this full circle, is like there are definitely two types of people, and you kind of can and should decide like who you are and where you add value. And it can change over time, depending on what your business needs. And like maybe we can like embrace that and say, like, right now my business needs me to be this. As we kind of grow up, maybe I need to be more of like a product leader once we've kind of found our place, because implementing and executing, like growing a company and standardizing things is really hard for someone who's like a creative, right?
Absolutely. And I would 100% agree with you. If you don't know who you are, then it's hard for you to decide how am I going to shore up this weakness or how am I going to embrace that weakness and use it as a motivation to make me better. So, like, I know that I'm not that product visionary guy, but I used to think I couldn't be any kind of a product visionary guy. Like, if I had somebody else's idea, I could implement it. That was my shtick, actually, when I first got into entrepreneurship. That's why I started buying stuff instead of building it. I'm like, I can execute to anything, but I just don't know what it is I should be executing to. And now that I'm here in this situation with Recapture, I'm thinking about it very differently. I'm saying to myself, all right, well, There isn't anybody else to tell me what to do with recapture. I'm not going to find that. So what I have to do is I have to start talking to other people and figure out what are the things that this market needs that I don't understand. And so that means I got to stretch out of my comfort zone and start talking to other people. And this is part of what I ended up doing at Shopify Unite, was to have these conversations with other people. And I ended up having some really interesting, deep, good conversations around this topic. And that's where I ended up leading into this customer lifetime value part, because that was an observation that wasn't immediately obvious to me. Like, you got all these email marketing solutions, you've got all this e-commerce stuff going on, there's significant overlap between the two, but what are they not doing? What is it that they're missing on this here? And so that's where I figured that out, and now we're starting to execute to it. And now that I, you know, and put that time in to try to, I don't want to say be the product visionary, but, you know, I embraced more of the visionary side and tried to understand that and get more out of that than I have in the past. That's led to interesting things, because now I bring that to the customers and they're like, oh yeah, I'm really struggling with that. How did you know? Like, now all of a sudden you feel like a genius,
right?
Even though all I did was just sit there and have some really tough conversations and try to figure out what the heck is going on. So this is where, like, knowing your market and being a real deep part of that niche or that subsegment or that market really helps, because these are things, these were insights that I didn't have into e-commerce prior to doing this. So that was something that I had to figure out and learn. And, you know, this is going to be true for anybody. If you don't really understand your audience, if you don't really understand their pain, if you don't really understand the things that they are having trouble with, or you just do it on a superficial level, you're going to only get a superficial solution out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then conversely, like, if you were just the visionary person and you're struggling to execute. So, you know, I actually was spending time this weekend with this very brilliant woman who is a clinical psychiatrist, psychologist. I don't think she's a psychiatrist. I think she's a psychologist. And she is an amazing visionary. This woman struggles to execute anything. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. she just, like, there are 30 half-finished projects sitting around her house. And those are just the ones that I saw and noticed. You know, and then there's probably 30 more in her head that she's ready to go start on right now. But when you lack the discipline to get one of those done or to prioritize it or to make that one the top thing that you're going to focus on for some period of time, then you just have like this wasteland of all these projects that are sitting out there that are half baked, half finished, quarter started, whatever it is, but nothing ever gets implemented. So you have to have both. You have to have both.
Yeah. And I think this is probably where like a co-founder dynamic comes in too. That there should be somebody capable of both of these in an organization. And if you're a solo founder like you and I are, we have to find a way for you to be lean more towards the visionary side and me probably to lean more towards the leadership or the management side, because I just suck and hate the details and stuff and I have to force myself into it. But if you're like looking for a co-founder, or if you're in a co-founder relationship already, I think it's really important to say like, okay, I'll label myself as this and I'll label you as this. And we're going to try to live in our buckets and be complementary, and not like play to our weaknesses, but really embrace our strengths. Because I mean, I don't know, sometimes Dave, I look at like some of these co-founder relationships or partners that are out there and I'm like, wow, that is really great. They can lean on each other. They can really embrace each other's strengths. Sometimes I think that really is the way to take something big, or at least to make the road a little easier. I don't know. But I think this is another example of where, like, you know, a creative person and a developer, or a marketing person and a developer, or a designer and a developer, something like that. They're all developers. is really like a necessary combination. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the co-founder relationship, I think, is often looked at in the who's going to do sales and marketing and who's going to do the technical side of it. But this is really a different version of that. Mm-hmm. You know, the sales and marketing doesn't even really play into this point of it. But if you're both like product leaders and one of you is sales and marketing and the other is technical, then you might end up coming up with sort of a mediocre product vision, unless you really just happen to understand the market really well or execute better than anybody else because everybody else's solutions are sucky. So that's certainly another dimension that, if I was looking for a co-founder, I would probably strongly consider that right now. Find out, are you a visionary type? Are you a leader type? Are you going to complement me and my skill set here? And in what ways, where are your desires? Where are your strengths? Because if somebody wants to be technical but isn't really good at being technical, that's going to be a terrible mismatch there.
Yeah, I think this is probably, looking at failed partnerships or co-founder relationships, this is probably the like intangible that's overlooked a lot, right? Because it's easy to say you're the sales and marketing guy and, I'm the developer or whatever, because that's a label that everyone else gives us. But things like this and personality traits are probably the intangible things that people overlook a lot. So, yeah, it really is worth looking at maybe this and these types of things to say, like, are you truly complementary? And if you're not, are you kind of going down the same path? If you have kind of alignment on your goals and visions and perspectives on things, then you're more likely to be successful.
Yep.
Well, man, I think that's it for me for this week. I hate to say it's been like a month since we've talked, but with the traveling and kind of a slow summer, there's not like a whole lot new going on with us other than traveling and kind of getting by with some of these things. So I think we'll wrap it up there.
All right, that sounds good. If you have any thoughts about co-founders or product vision versus leader, we'd love to hear from you. Why don't you shoot us an email, podcast@roguestartups.com, and we'll chat about it a little bit more on a future episode. And if you have time, leave us a review in iTunes. Tell us what you think. Until next week.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.